Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I have on the political right Representative Dan McKay.
Oh, I'm on the right today?
You are on the right, and I know it's going to be
a tough
challenge for you.
Good morning.
It's been a tough week for Republicans in Washington, D.C.
We're shining. We're ready.
And on the political left, Utah Democratic leader Emily Hayes.
Hello. Thanks for having me on again.
Nice to have you back, Emily. I mentioned a tough week in Washington, D.C. for Republicans. I watched the news this week about Manafort and Cohen and just these, it felt like cards just falling in a house of cards. And I, you know, for me, I'm just aghast that the presidency is in this type of peril.
Everyone can do
leadership
better.
Leadership peril, morality,
I think we walk away from this week and we say, you know what? Both sides, regardless of party affiliation, whatever it may be, everyone can do better than they're currently doing in D.C. And I'm kind of looking forward to the chapter on this closing with whatever the conclusion it is so that we can all just kind of move on. And let's start having policy conversations. When was the last time we started talking about providing affordable care for families? Let's just go down the list of all the things. Let's talk about immigration. That thing has just taken a back row for the last 6 months.
Debt?
Let's talk about national debt. You know, and,
Emily,
and
I'm
the
sure
great
you
Democratic
have
plan to add $32 trillion to it with Medicaid for everyone. But that's we'll deal with that another time.
I'm sure you have.
Well, the Republicans are already doing a pretty good job at adding to the national debt, so I don't think we have too much we're going to be too much competition for you there, Dan.
We just don't want everybody healthy.
I'm sure you have a lot of things that you want to, you know, that you could say about what's going on with the people around the president and this. And I want you to do that, but I want you to comment on the difference between, let's just say, CNN and Fox when news like this breaks. Because I think it says something really problematic to me about the state of our media.
Yeah, I mean, if you turned on Fox News last night, they weren't really touching on the Manafort or Cohen convictions at all.
How does that happen if you think of it as the independent media that's the conscience of the community?
I mean, I think it's pretty clear that we don't have independent media when it comes to Fox News. I mean, if you've looked at what they're reporting in the last 24, 48 hours, I mean, they're reporting on really partisan issues that have nothing to do with what's actually breaking right now. Yeah. And, you know, I agree. I would like for us to get back to talking about policies, but I think that, you know, you almost can't talk policy when the very nature of your government is at stake. I mean, we have a president whose closest advisors, campaign manager, legal counsel are being convicted of serious fraud charges, especially election fraud. And, you know, when those things are happening and the right is pretending that it's not, I mean, where are we at? How are we supposed to move forward?
Do you see any fault in the coverage of CNN on these things?
I honestly don't really watch CNN. Like, I know that's supposed to be, like, the bastion of the left. Like, I'm the kind of person who likes to read her news. That's kind of my preferred venue because I don't really like any kind of punditry. Like, I'll watch it on, like, an election night or something
like
that.
Yeah, but generally, it's not normal fare for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Dan, quick comment on Fox and the way they're covering, these real problems for the president. I mean, it's as if there aren't problems and it's all fake news and so we're not going to cover it. And it's like, really?
Well, look, we can have a long conversation about how accountable people should be there around the president, whether or not attorneys should be taping conversations, whether or not, I mean, you go down the list of all the things that should be happening, right? My favorite in the Fox News CNN debate is the fact that both websites have mentions of each other's cross headlines, but then where they go on the sub headlines from those things is the really interesting commentary to me. So personally, I'm kind of like Emily. I don't really like to watch the news that kind of time. I can read much faster. So I would just say, come on. This is the fourth estate, as you keep claiming, and the fourth estate is on vacation.
What do you make of the Utah congressional delegation and their reaction to the Manafort and Cohen news?
Well, Hatch has made the strongest statement, right? And I think
he's not very happy.
And he's not very happy with where things are. I think that the fact that you have the senior statesman in the state and the senior statesman in the country, really, when you have Senator Orrin Hatch saying things like, it hasn't reached impeachment, yet. That to me is a big statement from a senior member of the Republican Party, and I think everybody, I think a lot of eyebrows raised when you saw that comment.
Emily, do you have any words to say for how the Utah delegation's handling this news?
I mean, I think the Hatch's statement about, you know, he's not very happy, but the president shouldn't necessarily be held responsible for the actions of those around him. I mean, come on, if this was a Democratic president, he would be having a heyday if this was some, you know, minor aide in the White House who was convicted of these things. And so I think that it says a lot about the president. I mean, he made that quote about, I only hire the best people. Well, he's not doing a very good job of that if he really stands by the people that he is hiring.
Let's stay outside of state borders. I'm going to leave Trump here.
I was going to say,
unless you want to
say, yeah, I mean, well, that's all said. Here's the thing. This is 101 politics to everyone who is running for office and is considering running for office. Don't do dumb things. And I include in the dumb things list, like sleeping with people or having extramarital affairs with anyone, and then even compounding that, don't try and hide your crimes, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing I will say about Donald Trump. I've never heard the president talk about punching from a moral place on marriage or those kinds of things. It's not his strength, and he's never punched from there. And so the other thing I haven't heard, and I went and listened to all the tapes from Cohen that have been released so far, and the only thing the smoking gun that is everybody keeps talking about, I've listened to this tape a couple times, and the one thing I don't hear the president say is, pay them from my campaign accounts, right?
Yeah. But they didn't pay them from the campaign accounts. I mean, that's pretty clear.
Right. And so
they reimbursed them from the Trump organization.
Right. So what I would say is, at the end of the day, it is all of this is just bad, Natalie.
It is.
And we just need better people to run for office. We need the American people to select better people, right?
Vote Democrat.
We need people in office
Dan McCabe,
that aren't.
But you can vote Democrat.
We need people in office who aren't morally barren like our president.
Yeah.
Hey,
we do not have these problems.
We're
going
to have to go to break, but let me just do one more thing on the Trump thing, because I had something really wonderful happen last week with Trump appointees. The institute I lead hosted a symposium. We had two political appointees come out. Social Determinants of Health. We had the Assistant Secretary of Health in town and the person over innovation for Medicaid and Medicare. They were fabulous. Mm. They were a breath of fresh air. Their commitment to their job, their understanding of the challenges, their competence, it just really gave me hope. And there were a lot of people in the symposium that said, you know, you get outside the White House, there's some really outstanding people helping us out in this country. And I thought that was a really bright news. Any quick commentary on that?
No, I think, you know, there are great public servants in our government. I think that that's something that is discounted a lot by people.
We get
who
so
are,
focused on the White
yeah,
House.
You know, we get so focused on our electeds. But I mean, there's the, you know, we talk about the bureaucracy of government, but those are dedicated people who really care about what they're doing. I mean, you don't go into public service for what it pays if you don't really care about the issues that you're working on. And so I think that that's something that I appreciate. My husband's a government employee. And so I definitely appreciate people who put that passion there.
Yeah, and there's the career service people, and then there's the political appointees. Mm-hmm. And the career service are outstanding, but these were the political appointees, and they were outstanding. So I got to hand it to the Trump administration on that. Dan, last word?
No, I'm good.
You're good. Okay. Yeah. In our next segment, we got a lot to talk about. We'll talk about what's going on in the Catholic Church. We'll talk about the renaming of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and medical marijuana. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the right.
Emily Hayes on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We're talking about news and public events affecting our world. And I got to say that I have really had a somber week as I've watched as the news reports have come out about the decades of abuse at the hands of Catholic priests in Pennsylvania and what we'll call the systemic cover-up by bishops. Wow. You know, this is hard, hard, sad, offensive, difficult stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not a member of the Catholic Church. But it's pretty clear that there were some bad people doing bad things.
Well, let's just let's just say, I want to, you know, I'm not Catholic either, and full disclosure, no one cares. The thing is, it doesn't matter what religion it is. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter agnostic. It doesn't matter where things are, right? Mm-hmm. We have a sexual problem mm-hmm. with, you know, deviancy, right? And this is a deviant behavior. Having sex with minors is a deviant behavior, whatever the sexual conduct might be. Mm-hmm. And whether
rape is a deviant behavior.
Mm-hmm. Rape is a deviant yeah. behavior, right? And there are these outliers all over the place. And no church, no religion, no private organization, wherever it may be, is exempt from it. But the one thing they can do is, as soon as it is disclosed, they can take the approach of full disclosure, because it is far better for these organizations not to try and cover mm-hmm. for these things. It feels like we're talking about the campaign contribution or the campaign issues of our last segment. Again, mm-hmm. everybody wants to cover their own backside just on everything.
Yeah. And Emily, what are your comments on this one?
Well, I think it, you know, for me, it really shows the culture that has arisen around this deviant behavior, as you mm-hmm. say. You know, a systemic cover-up shows that not only was this known, but it was known that it was happening at such a huge scale. And
that
so,
they were strategic about what do we do.
And, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that takes a lot of effort, a lot of coordination. And so, you know, I think that, unfortunately, I think we're going to continue to have stories like this come out. You know, and I'm not personally Catholic, but I have family who are, and I think that it must be incredibly painful to mm-hmm. be, you know, watching this happen in your church, because the Catholic Church does good things. And I think Pope Francis is a great man. And I think that, you know, he's made some missteps in how he's been handling this, and I think is now going in the right direction. But I think that the Catholic Church needs to accept that they have a culture that's not healthy, and they might need to change some things in how mm-hmm. they operate.
Yeah, really interesting.
Is monogamy good for, I mean, not monogamy, but celibacy?
No, mm-hmm. I think it's terrible.
It seems like that self-denial is mm-hmm. something that is a laudable thing, right? Whether it be in diet or whatever it might be. It is so hard for some of these priests, it seems. Mm-hmm. It would be impossible for me. okay. But I'm just saying, this celibacy deal, it's yeah. tough in a
yeah,
religious concept.
Really tough. Let's stay with, you know, sort of faith issues for a minute, come a little closer to home. Speaking of a global faith, the LDS faith has its claims to global reach. And I called it the LDS faith, but the sitting LDS prophet has basically said, let's quit calling it the LDS Church, the LDS Faith, the Mormon Church. It's the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And he wants us to call it by its real name. Emily, we'll go to you first on that one.
So I'll give another disclaimer. I'm not Mormon or
a
Latter-day
Saint.
Like
a lot of faith disclosure today.
But
yeah,
you,
right?
But you could be. I know two individuals who would love to visit you in your neighborhood.
Oh, well,
that's a whole other issue.
If they can find my apartment, I will talk to them. So, you know, I'm not LDS, Latter-day Saint. But, you know, I have family who are, again. So I think it's really interesting to me because, you know, I'm kind of a marketing nerd in some ways. And so I think it's really an interesting challenge to kind of rebrand, but it's kind of not a rebranding. Mm-hmm. Like, it's more just like a shift in how I think the church is thinking about itself. Yeah. And I think that their challenge is not going to be so much within, you know, the faithful, but within those outside of it, because it almost feels like that's who this is targeted at, mm-hmm. is that, like, the church doesn't want to be known as the Mormon Church by people outside of it, because it's almost like there's misunderstanding or a misconception yeah. or something. Yeah. And so I'm actually curious, you know, from what you think about just that, like, is this more for the people in the faith or outside of the faith?
Yeah, it's a great question, Emily. Yeah. And Dan, I'll come to you, but I'll just say this, that I think it's interesting that if the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints really wanted to rebrand the church, this is not how they would do it. In other words, they have so much reach and power and expertise that they would overnight, like, have everything changed, all the questions answered. You following me, Dan? In other words,
yeah.
the LDS Church is incredibly competent at volunteerism, about following, the admonitions from on top and blah, blah, blah. Instead, this feels to me more like a Mormon prophet saying, I want a change of emphasis.
Yeah.
I want you focused on Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And this Mormon guy, nobody knows who he is, that's outside the faith. He's not central to our faith in terms of who we worship.
Yeah.
I want to change the emphasis, and I'm going to let it happen organically. Right. I'm going to say it, and let's see where we go.
Right. And I agree. I think from – and so I think what Emily hit on is an interesting question, right? Is it an internal or an external facing, you know, dilemma? Mm-hmm. I think it's mostly an external issue. As I listen to Emily's comments and yours, I think there are a lot of people who forget that Christ is a central tenet of the LDS Church's faith. Mm-hmm. And I even did it wrong there. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm going to get it wrong forever. So I think, though, that exterior look of people, you know, being in and interfacing with the church, I think the name Jesus Christ being a better introduction for the church than one of the prophets who was a writer and a contributor to the key tenet of the Book of Mormon. So anyways, we're very, very theological on this conversation. We will not ask for donations.
Hey, but I'm going to stay with faith for one other issue that sort of caught my eye. It was the stand-up show at Kingsbury Hall by comedian David Cross.
Tobias Funke.
He tweeted a picture of himself wearing temple garments. Yeah. So the, what would you call it? The holy,
The temple garments, you know. Okay.
I'm just trying to figure out how to do this, but
if you live in Utah and don't know what temple garments are, I am slightly worried about you.
Okay, but they're sacred to the faith.
Absolutely.
And this guy tweets a picture of him wearing these and saying, I'm coming to the University of Utah, blah, blah, blah. And the University of Utah retweets it. Mm. And interestingly, it turns out that the communications department out there, the guy that retweeted it, is one of the people you just referenced. He didn't know what was odd about the picture.
Yeah.
So he didn't have any cultural sensitivity, tweeted it, and then it just horrified, of course, the communications staff. And then President Ruth Watkins has to issue an apology, which she did with a lot of class, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so too. It was an uncomfortable situation for everyone, and they were very concerned about public perception as well as legislative perception on an issue like that. And so I'll just say they worked really hard to make sure that they understood that a retweet does not necessarily mean an endorsement of what the message is.
Well, and if the communications department would have known what they were dealing with,
there's no
it
way
wouldn't
that
have been
happens.
Retweeted.
No way. In fact, I'm pretty sure they might have contacted the comedian and said, you know, might be better. That said,
we pride ourselves. I'm employed by the University of Utah, but we pride ourselves with an inclusive and, you know, very open campus. And so, you know, this type of bigotry, I mean, I don't know what a better word to call it, is not, I mean, it's not consistent with the values of the university, but free speech is the value.
Yeah, that said, though, and this is what I told the university, I said, look.
You got a call, it sounds like.
There's consistency.
Yes, the legislator. I'm asking. Yeah. Did you?
Yeah,
they reached out to you and said, hey, we just want you to know. See, that's great. That's good communication.
So
well
the
done.
The consistency is, in my opinion, look, Ben Shapiro came to campus and the U hosted that, right? Mm-hmm. And so David Cross comes to campus and they're willing to. And David Cross is not really like an anti-Mormon guy, which kind of blew my mind that he had this, you know, that he took this route with this picture. But I think he wanted to like shock people and he certainly did that. That being said, the university is a place for countervailing ideas, to have this debate. And I will stand up for David's ability to guess to try and be offensive and let society deal with it. And I think appropriately, that's what happened.
Yeah. Emily, any final comments on that?
You know, I think if anyone knows David Cross, like this wasn't surprising.
Because he's very irreverent.
I mean, I don't think
I don't know him.
Yeah, I don't think he necessarily, he's not one of those comedians who's out there to like be offensive, but he definitely like doesn't really care what people think of him. And so I think that if you just know his style, it wasn't really surprising. I think the surprising part was it getting retweeted by the U, and now knowing that it was someone who didn't know what was going on. Like, it's at least understandable, but, you know, I think it wasn't a great move.
The spokesperson for the U, Chris Nelson, is very skilled at what he does. And I'm sure he was horrified when he saw this. But, Chris, kudos to you. You've done a great job to clear the record and do the right thing.
Yeah, can you imagine if the U said, we're going to blow this picture up and put it everywhere? Yeah. I mean, that could have been much worse.
Could have been a problem. Hey, okay, we're going
to
go.
That's what you always have to tell yourself in these situations.
We're going to go.
It could always be worse.
It could always be worse. We're going to go to medical marijuana. It's a tough transition. But it's Prop 2 on the ballot. And in the last week, we have learned that the LDS Church lobbyist Marty Stevens, a former Speaker of the House, is offering to work with initiative supporters to come to an agreement on issues that they both support. So it basically is showing the LDS Church is ramping up here.
Oh, interesting.
No surprise, right?
No surprise.
No surprise to either of you.
No.
Okay.
I'm surprised it took this long. That's the surprise.
So is there anything unseemly here to either of you? Because it doesn't, I'm not in all offended by it. And I think that it's.
I'm not offended, but.
I think this gets close enough to a moral issue that it's worth talking about.
I'll just say, and it'd be interesting to hear what Emily says after my take on this thought, because I really am interested intellectually. The problem, I think, well, it's a long time coming. The church needs to sit down, and they have sat down in the past on this issue with supporters, and they've kind of talked, but it's never been to, it's about to pass, and the people can, you know, do some things with the initiative. So I think the one element to this, though, that is different is I think the church is acknowledging that maybe some progress could be made in a positive way that's different than what the initiative is saying, and maybe initiative supporters can support that as well.
Okay, I want to translate
that. But they're in very different negotiating
positions. I want to translate that, because what everybody's looking for here is the balance between protecting public safety and the like and helping people with medical needs.
Yeah.
And I think what you just said is that the church is now showing some interest in trying to rebalance that in a way that the initiative does not. But where could we go that we would get that golden mean?
And that's what I think. You said it much more eloquently than I did, but I'm interested to see, Emily, being from, you know, kind of the outside.
Well, and let's hear from the left on this.
I mean, okay, I don't think it's surprising at all that the church is getting involved in this. I think that was pretty expected. I mean, the church is involved in anything that passes in this state.
Not anything.
That's
an overstatement.
That's not about initiative. But I think that, you know, I think that if they could come to some sort of agreement that achieved what the ballot initiative is trying to do, then, you know,
wouldn't
as long
that
as
be
it's
perfect,
if it's going to benefit people medically. I mean, I know people who need marijuana to treat, or cannabis, I think that's what you're supposed to call it, medically, to treat their illnesses and disabilities and things like that. And, you know, I think posing this as a morality issue is really kind of muddying the waters. I mean, we have much worse drugs that are legal in this state that cause addiction problems and things like that. And so I think that acknowledging that, you know, medical cannabis isn't this kind of, you know, boogeyman that's going to lead to all, you know, a bunch of kids smoking pot, like that's not, like, it's actually a pretty narrow usage that's allowed under the ballot initiative. And so, you know, I think my hope is that whatever comes out of this is going to help people, because I think that's what the people, I, you know, from what I know about the people running the initiative, that's what they want to do, is help patients.
Interesting. We've got to go to gripes, but I just say from the political middle, there's something really bothering me about the Medical Cannabis Act, and it deals with how blunt of an instrument it is to a very precise problem, which is, you know, the medical need here. Let's figure out how to go help those people.
Yeah.
You know, without creating this whole big new industry of medical cannabis in our state with all of the blunt, unintended consequences.
Right.
Hey, we got to go to gripes. I hope you guys are ready. Dan?
So ready.
Oh, it
so
looked
ready.
Like it.
I'm not sure which one to fire up, but I have so many. I'm a
Is
little...
this usually just a stalling tactic as you figure
no,
out which one?
the press this last week teed off on two Republican statements. One was on social media and another one on, you know, another comment speaking about LGBTQ issues. And I'll just say this. If you look through what was said and, you know, you kind of knew the people, you might kind of get a spectrum of why they were saying it. I don't necessarily excuse, you know, the statement. But it's just frustrating when the press tells a story in such a way that makes the person look so badly.
Mm.
And then at the end of the day, these are lay people, people who volunteer, you know, part of an organization. I mean, you imagine castigating Emily for something she said on social media.
Oh, it's happened.
Yeah. As I say, I just think everybody makes mistakes.
Calm down, everybody.
Calm
chill
down,
out. Give it a skip.
Out.
Be kind.
Now, that said, you know, stop saying stupid things, too.
Yeah. Emily, what's your gripe?
My gripe this week
is...
It's
ironic for me to say that. Sorry, Emily.
No, you're good. My gripe this week, I think, has to be all of the news yesterday between the Manafort and the Cohen guilty pleas. I got no work done. Mm. I mean, my productivity...
For a political junkie like you.
I know. Yeah. My productivity under the Trump administration has fallen. And I think that if we looked at productivity across the country since Trump has been elected, we would see millions of dollars lost in worker productivity. So
that's a great...
Thanks, Trump.
A great gripe. It's hard for me not to gripe about the Trump administration, but I'm going to go to the Third South bike lanes. And it's because...
Those are a mess.
Well, it's because I was walking across one the other day and almost got hit by a bike, and I'm a cyclist myself, and they're dangerous. They're just dangerous. And as a cyclist, I'd prefer to be to the right of traffic rather than to the right of the cars,
yep. mm-hmm.
to the left of the pedestrians, and in between all of that interaction.
Those are a mess.
Anyway, hey, you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined by Emily Hayes and Dan McKay. Program is produced by Emily Means. We hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks for listening.